Hi, everybody. Today's Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. And our friend Leith Maruf is back with us. Welcome back, Leith.
Good to be with you, Nima.
Leith, let's get started with what's going on in Lebanon. We know that Israel is attacking Lebanon and the government in Lebanon is trying to do something with the West. At least Macron was talking about it. It seems that there are some sort of communications between the government in Lebanon and France. What's the situation right now in Lebanon?
Well, yesterday the Zionists attacked the southern suburb of Beirut, Dahiya. This is the second time they attack Dahiya in less than 5 days. And so clearly right now, the attacks on Beirut are back on the agenda. The first time they attacked, the Israelis gave a warning, sending a map of where they're going to be attacking. So people evacuated that area. There was three schools, elementary schools around the building that they attacked. They were all evacuated. Luckily, nobody got injured. But even then, the Israelis attacked a second building in that same day that wasn't on the map of targets that they said they will be attacking. But yesterday, the attack came at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was no warning. We know at least 4 are martyred, 10 injured. One of those that were martyred was a commander in Hezbollah. And Hezbollah has announced holding a funeral for him in the south of Lebanon in his village today at 3 o'clock, and in half an hour they'll be holding the funeral. Multiple things we can, predict from this. Number one is that the Lebanese government was unable to have the guarantors of the ceasefire, the United States and France, to actually hold Israel to account. And another thing that we know right now is that there is no a battle zone in the south of Lebanon, south of the Litani, that people thought maybe this is what Israel is trying to do, attack just positions of Hezbollah in the south. Well, now it's clear that Israel is willing to attack any place in Lebanon anytime, without warning and without any fight from Hezbollah. One other thing that we need to note here is that the spokespersons for Hezbollah, different leaders in the parliament and other sectors, have spoken since the attacks on al-Dahiya and are warning right now that if the Lebanese government is unable to stop these attacks, that we'll be back to full war, and that Hezbollah is ready right now militarily to take on the Zionists once more. So I think we're tattering on the edge of a return of full hostilities in Lebanon, all because the West hasn't been able to hold the Zionists to their word.
What the government is trying to say in Lebanon, are they trying to convince Hezbollah? Are they trying to convince the people that they're trying to do everything at their disposal?
Yeah, I mean, the latest messages from the new prime minister and president were a little bit more confrontational than before. So it seems like the pressure building up inside Lebanon is reaching the president now and prime minister. You know, over the last month or so, their statements have been very weak. But now I think because Beirut is back in the crosshairs of the Zionists, and you know, half of the population of Lebanon lives in Beirut, this is now putting pressure on the president and the prime minister to do something. Otherwise, they're going to lose credibility completely. And because Hezbollah has, giving them all the space, all the time to do something, and the more they delay taking action, or the French government or the Americans fail to have the Zionists stop the attacks on Lebanon, the more they are delegitimized as a president or prime minister. So this is partially why we see the new statements coming out from them are more harsh. It's expected that the next few days there'll be a Security Council meeting at the United Nations, and that Lebanon will present a motion to condemn the Zionist. And it's also very much expected that the Americans will veto this resolution. Since the morning, there's been all these unidentified flights flying in the airspace of Lebanon, most probably Israeli and American intelligence gathering, which kind of gives us the impression that there'll be another attack coming very, very soon.
Who's the major party in communication with Lebanon? Is that France, the United States? Who's doing that?
Both France and the United States. The American envoy, she contacted the president this morning. The French are in contact all the time with the government of Lebanon. But it's clear that France has no sway over the Zionists. And if it had any effect before the coming of Trump, France, now it doesn't, because of the squabble right now between the EU and the Americans around taxes and so forth. So, you know, if Macron had any sway on Biden to try to protect a little bit Lebanon as a former colony of France, now clearly Macron and the French government have no sway at all at over the American government. And in fact, you know, probably Trump and his cabal see the attacks on Lebanon as added pressure on France to give up some of its old colonial holdings and or influence in the region.
And what do they say to the Lebanese government? What is the main reason that Israel is behaving this way? Do they give any sort of reason for that? Or they're just saying they're getting out of the hand, we're not capable of controlling them?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously don't have the internal discussions between the French, Americans, and the Lebanese government. And if there was any criticism of the Zionists by the French or the Americans, they probably will never say it publicly. And Lebanon would not probably disclose these criticisms, so it doesn't undermine the Americans or the French. But, truthfully, we can look at actions of the U.S. specifically to understand what their position is. And over the last 24 hours, there's been multiple flights carrying weapons coming from Al Udeid, airbase, American airbase in Qatar, to the various military airports of the Zionist colony. So they're bringing in more weapons. We know also the head of Central Command, the general in charge of all the activities of the Americans in the region, has been since yesterday, so right after the attack on Beirut, has been in Tel Aviv, sitting in the Kirya, which is basically the Pentagon of the Zionist colony, in an underground nuclear bunker with the chief of staff of the Zionists. Their meetings, according to the Israeli media, have lasted more than 10 hours straight. So all of that is indications that the U.S. is plotting with the Zionists, not ordering things, but is taking direction from the Zionists. And, you know, both these meetings and the deliveries of weapons over the last 24 hours indicate that there is a combined, operations being conducted either in Lebanon, Yemen, and or a future attack on Iran that's coming very soon.
As you've mentioned, it seems that Israel and the United States want to attack Iran. But we know one of the main objectives of the United States in terms of negotiating with Iran is Yemen. And Iran says and they're not negotiating on Yemen because Yemen is a sovereign country. They're going to decide on their part. But how do you think that there are two possibilities right now? They're sending a lot of weapons, equipment to the Diego Garcia base. One idea would be to attack Iran, and the other would be just flatten Yemen and going just attacking Yemen. Do you think that any of these two options are possible?
I mean, we look at those new weapons arriving at the Diego Garcia occupied islands. By the way, those islands are occupied illegally by the British. The indigenous people were ethnically cleansed and expelled to Mauritius. The United Nations and have said that these islands are occupied illegally, and even the British courts have ordered the British to hand over the islands back to their indigenous people, and the British government is refusing the order of the High Court of the UK to continue allowing the Americans to use this base. This base right now is very crucial to the Americans because in the situation of a full-out war on Yemen and or Iran, it's very expected that Iran and or Yemen will attack American air bases in the region. And therefore, the Diego Garcia base and airfield will become the main attack point by air for the Americans in the region, given that also their aircraft carriers are unable to conduct their operations without threat from Yemeni, ballistic missiles, hyper missiles, and drones. So we look at the different weapons that have been delivered to the Diego Garcia Island, and we see B-2s and B-52s. So these are strategic bombers. They're not going to carry regular bombs. These are, you know, bombers that are going to carry either the mother of all bombs and or nuclear warheads. And given that we saw over the last week or so of American attacks on Yemen, that the regular bunker buster bombs have failed to penetrate the bases under the mountains that Yemen has. In fact, the Wall Street Journal had a report showing that within an hour or two of attacks on different missile bases under the mountains in Yemen, that they were operating again and firing from those same bases. So if the Americans want to defeat Yemen and or in that go further and defeat Iran, it's clear that they will have to use mother of all bombs and or nuclear warheads. And even then, given that the Americans used on some of these bases in the mountains, they used tens of bombs simultaneously, like they did here in Beirut when they wanted to assassinate Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, when they dumped 40-somewhat bombs at the same time on the same location to try to reach the bunker where Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah was in Beirut. This is the same situation. They did that in Yemen, and it didn't work out. So therefore, they have no choice right now going forward, the Americans, if they want to continue this war against Yemen and or expand it against Iran, to go to using nuclear warheads and or the multiple mother of all bombs shot at the same location. And we're all sure, of course, that Iran's underground cities are even bigger and deeper than those in Yemen. So I, of course, would never wish this to happen, that this Yemen and or Iran is attacked by nuclear weapons. But given the viciousness of the West and their fear at losing their imperial control of the world, it's very probable that this will happen.
Looking at the communication, you saw the chats on Signal. They were talking about Yemen the way that it seems, even the head of Pentagon, you look at the way that he's commenting in those chats, it's unbelievable. How did you find it? It's so childish the way that they were talking about Yemen killing. And right now you see Yemen is just shooting down drones, or these drones are so much sophisticated, so much, they're so expensive, and they're capable of building a rocket in Yemen, indigenous rockets, and hitting these drones. You look at on the part of the United States, on the part of Yemen, and the way they're responding. How do you see the way that Yemenis are responding to the United States?
Yeah, so the first thing about those that chat on Signal is I want us all to take it with a grain of salt. Where I personally, because this supposed chat was leaked by Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, former Israeli soldier who participated in the genocides in Lebanon and in Palestine. In fact, this man left his studies at a famous university in the United States to go and participate in the killing. So given that, I personally am not sure of the validity of everything in these texts, and especially that given we saw a sentence there saying that they have seen the head of Yemen's rocket forces entering his girlfriend's apartment, and then they killed him. So for me, given that Ansarullah, define themselves as a religious group, this sentence seemed to be manufactured purposefully to undermine the religiosity of Ansarullah in front of their supporters. Okay, so and we've seen this before many times, the West using this false propaganda to undermine leadership somewhere in the world, and so I'm not sure that everything that we saw there is true. The other thing is that clearly, if it was true, you can see how the elite in control of the situation in the United States are have lost their mind. They are religious fanatics. They really want to bring Armageddon. They don't care about children and civilians at all, and they're willing to genocide a whole population in order to maintain their supremacy, just like the Zionists themselves in the Zionist colony. I think the elite in the West have now all become Zionists, meaning supremacists, in various forms, and they see the Arabic peoples, whether Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Baha'i, whatever it is, as the main obstacle to their propaganda or self-belief that they are the chosen people. Just the existence of Arabic Jews in the 1940s and 50s was a threat to Zionism, and that's why we saw the Zionist work to ethnically cleanse the Arabic Jews from Arabic countries, paying the king of Iraq and the king of Morocco per head of every Jew that is expelled from Morocco and Iraq. And we see the same thing right now happening with the Christian Arabs. The killings that are happening on behalf of the West, the expulsion. So look, we Arabs and Persians are civilizations that and peoples that have existed for centuries, tens of thousands of years. And just our mere existence is a reminder that America is just a baby in terms of human development, and that we need to be removed for the Americans to continue thinking that they are the chosen people, manifest destiny, all of that.
What's one of our guests and our friends here on this podcast is Pepe Escobar. He was in Yemen and he has been experiencing something. He was mentioning that it was amazing for him. For those people who don't understand the mindset of Yemenis and why they're doing this and why they're fighting for Gaza, for Palestine, do you think that is there any sort of understanding? Many people are shocked with the way that the Yemenis are behaving. They don't know why are they doing this. If you were to mention what's going on in the mind of Yemenis, because you look at the same way in the negotiations that the United States is trying to force on Iran, is trying to convince Iran to do, is what the biggest part, one of the important issues is the case of Yemen. And but they need to understand the reality of Yemen. Do you think that they're capable of understanding that?
I don't think they're capable of understanding the reality of Yemen and or Iran, because they have a huge obstacle, which is their supremacy and their racism. You see, if you're racist and supremacist, you can't understand the historical context of pride that is in Yemen and or in Iran. I mean, the Yemeni people know their history, and they know that in 15,000 years, there hasn't been one foreign occupier that was able to occupy the mountains of Yemen and Sana'a. That's something that the Yemeni people, you know, drink in their breast milk when they're born, their history. I tell you something, I don't tell this story that often, but, you know, I lived in Riyadh, the capital of the Saudi kingdom, in my childhood. And there was something that happened that I will never forget. I was walking with my father. I was like 6 years old. I was walking with my father in the old city of Riyadh. On the sidewalk, you know, the old city in Riyadh is a cheap market that people come and buy stuff from. And on the sidewalk walking beside us was a Yemeni man. Yemenis are mostly short and scrawny, you know, thin people. And he bumped into a Najdi person by accident. Najd is the heartland of what is now the Saudi kingdom, the plateau where Riyadh is. And this Najdi man was football player size, American football player size, you know, huge and fat and so forth. And the Saudi man just turned around and started cursing racist, and vile comments at the Yemeni man. And the Yemeni man, without saying one word, just reached out and grabbed the guy from his testicles, okay, and squeezed. So the Najdi guy started screaming, and all the Saudis around ran to try to help him. So the Yemeni guy in a very thick Yemeni accent said, "If anyone gets closer, I'll pop his testicles." Okay. So all these Saudis just moved back. And at that moment, the Yemeni just squeezed on the testicles and pulled the guy down on his knees. He pulled down on the guy's sack, and the guy, the Saudi, was on his knees. And at that moment, the Yemeni took off his leather sandals while still holding to the guy's testicles and started slapping him in the face left and right with his leather sandals until blood started popping out of the guy's cheeks. At that moment, the Yemeni, like a super gazelle, okay, like Flash from DC Comics, just let go of the guy's testicles, put his foot on the guy's head and jumped over him and ran out. Not one Saudi was able to catch this Yemen. Okay. So this is Yemen. Okay. This is you can imagine, this is a foreign worker, Yemeni, in Riyadh, in the heart of the hellhole. And he didn't accept humiliation from a Saudi and did this. I've never seen anybody do something like this. And I will never forget the images. I can still remember the guy's face, okay? And the blood popping out of the Saudi's cheeks. This is Yemen. And me as an Arab, I know what a Yemeni is. Even if I didn't see what I told you this story, every other Arab in the Arabic world knows that you do not F with a Yemeni. Because Yemenis do not accept humiliation, even if it means that they're going to be killed. They take you out and your whole tribe before they die with them. And of course, you as an Nima, as a Brazilian from Iranian background, you know, of course, how much pride the Iranian people have in their history of Persian Empire, of Islamic, thought and poetry and philosophy and so forth. You can't ask Iran to bow down to the Americans. That's not going to happen. Even if the all of the government in Iran is destroyed today, even if hopefully never, but even if the Ayatollah is killed, even if they nuke Iran, there will be prideful Iranians that will come up and refuse the rule of the West. I mean, look at the Shah himself before. Remember the Shah, Iran was occupied by the British and the Americans during World War, and the Soviets even, during World War II, to force it to give oil to the Allies against the Nazis. And, the Shah himself was not happy about that, so they removed him and put a different Shah. So it's, even those who will collaborate with the Americans, at one point, pride in them will tell them, what the hell are you doing? We are a nation of thousands of years of history, and having these cowboys, these bandits and pirates that looted the whole continent think that they can rule us. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
The problem, Leith, by the way, is in the mindset of the West, is that they think that by decapitation, assassinating the leaders, they're going to be able to defeat Iran, Hezbollah, Yemen. But that doesn't work. It's not going to work for them, especially when it comes to Hezbollah, which is a great, they're in layers. It's not just a group of people that they're owning everything. It's a mindset. It's a resistance mindset. And we have the same in Yemen, in Iran. Iran is a government. Yemen is a country. These people, you've mentioned that if you do something to the leader, someone else would be the leader. They're not sure of people to replace. There are many people who are capable of doing that job.
Yes, and this is
that doesn't make sense in the mindset of the West.
Exactly, and this is why they are trying very hard, as we see in Iraq and in Syria and in Palestine, to erase all the archaeological record that people in those countries fall back to remember their pride. If you erase all the archaeological history and then you go and change forcefully the educational programs like in Syria that the HTS is doing right now, and strip the nation and the country of all of history and memory, you may be able to enslave a people. But you see, the main problem for the West right now, led by the empire ruled from DC, is that time is not on their side. And this is why we see the acceleration of genocidal actions by the West in our region. Because after 100 years of trying to enslave the Palestinian people and forcing them down on their knees, they still are standing and they're refusing and they're rejecting to accept the legitimacy of a Jewish state, a Zionist state in the land of Palestine. The Arabs, whether they're Christian or Muslim, still refuse to accept that the interpretation that the West has of our theological heritage. Therefore, they've lost already. You see, this is why they are reverting to genocidal actions, the West. And I think this is the same thing, you know, will happen in Iran. You know, you can't uproot a people from their history or totally chop it off the tree from its roots. You can't do that. It will not live the tree, and or the roots will sprout. Okay, so these are all indications of the desperation of the West, and time is not on their side. The longer we can sustain our resistance, the surer we are to be liberated. And I think this is part of what the Axis of Resistance was trying to do in the beginning of this genocide in Gaza. You know, although we all want to liberate Palestine right now, the leadership of the Axis of Resistance was hoping, and is still hoping, I think, that a prolonged war of attrition would lead to the collapse of the Zionist colony and the exit of the United States from our region without having to have millions upon millions of martyrs across the region. But unfortunately, the West doesn't want to allow that to happen. And this is why we see this genocide being conducted all around the region.
By the way, the mindset is not unique when it comes to Iran or Yemen or Hezbollah. They were doing the same to Russia. If you remember, they wanted to decapitate. They tried to assassinate Putin in the last 3 years, and which they failed because they thought that there someone going to replace him would be better for the West. I would argue that is not the case. That wouldn't be the case. And you've mentioned Syria, Leith, and Erdogan 2 days ago, if I'm not mistaken, said, may Allah deal with Israeli Zionists. And you look at, he's just giving up his responsibility and on Allah to do whatever he's capable of doing. How is that going to resonate with Turkish people?
I mean, we already see that the actions of Erdogan and his words over the last few years are coming to bite him. So the occupation of Syria and the transportation of these Wahhabi death squads from all around the world to conduct the genocide that's happening right now in Syria is spilling into Turkey. So the Alawite population in Turkey, which are 25% of the population, are out demonstrating for the last week. Confrontations all across Turkey. Although everybody thinks it's only about the mayor of Istanbul being arrested, who is the highest visibility Alawi politician in Turkey. But I think the real reason people are out in the street in such ways is because of the genocide in Syria. And it's the Alawite populations in the south of Turkey see their brothers and sisters in Syria being slaughtered, and they see the killers, those Wahhabi death squads, crossing back and forth the border between Syria and Turkey and walking in the streets of the villages of Alawites inside Turkey as if they own Turkey itself. So you have that, you have the Kurdish population, you have all the secularists and the nationalists, the patriots. All of them right now are out in the street. And this is the most dangerous moment for Erdogan because of his stupidity, because of his, two-faced, his speech not matching his actions. All the talk about hate to Zionism and to the Zionist colony and love to the Palestinians, while he is actually doing all this business with the Zionists. On the one hand, he's all the population in Turkey that is listening to his speeches are getting riled up in support of Palestine. On the other, the minute he is being exposed as a collaborationist with the Zionists, this is now the riled up street is going to take it somewhere. And as we see, it's taking it out on Erdogan, and he deserves what's coming to him. And hopefully this time, at least this is what we are seeing, is that Iran and Russia are not coming to the help of Erdogan. Remember, the last time there was a coup against him, it was Iran and Russia that saved Erdogan, and I wish they never did. But they thought at that time that he will be a reasonable man after they save him, that he'll stop his plotting against Russia and against Iran in Syria and so on, and it didn't. So let's hope that the Turkish people can do something against Erdogan, can liberate their own country from being a slave of NATO and the Zionists. You look at also what is happening in Syria today. Turkey is building new bases inside Syria. There, it was just announced that they're building a new base in the T4 base just beside Palmyra in the Syrian desert. And the attacks on Christians have accelerated, the attacks on Christians inside Syria. And it's all happening in areas where Turkish military is stationed. So the conducting of genocide against the Syrians is happening under the watch of Turkey.
Just to wrap up this session, Leif, what do we know about the situation in Gaza right now? Are they going to get in aids? Are they going to get in help from the outside? How's the situation?
I mean, it was just announced a few hours ago that the Zionists attacked an UNRWA UN hospital clinic, and at least 10 people have been confirmed martyred, many of them children and women. We know yesterday that it was confirmed the Zionists, after they kidnapped 16 medics and medical workers from the hospital in Gaza, that when other medics, paramedics came to save them. These are all Red Cross, Red Crescent workers. They were all assassinated in front of their families. And then the medics with the ambulance were all buried underground in a mass grave with the ambulance itself. So, you know, the level of depravity, I don't think has been seen in modern human history. We know now that in Gaza, in the last 17 months, more journalists have been killed than all the wars on this planet since the 1880s combined. Can you imagine that? More journalists killed in one strip of land in a little bit over a year and a half than the number of journalists killed over 200 years across the whole planet. The number of medical workers, UN workers, school workers, teachers, that's all also record history numbers. And the Americans are still supplying the weapons. The West is still supplying the weapons. Nothing's gonna stop the Zionists except a military defeat. And this is why I think, you know, it's inevitable the expansion of this war, because, you know, put yourself in the place of Netanyahu. I mean, he's right now able to do whatever he wants to. Every capital in the West is behind him. All the money and weapons of all of NATO are under his command. He can get professors and students in Germany and the US and Canada deported and jailed and beaten and stripped of everything, all their rights, all for, you know, at the command of Netanyahu. So why would he stop committing this genocide if he's not defeated? And why would he stop expanding the zone where he can commit genocide if this is the power he has? You know, in the West Bank, the situation is getting really bad. It's been almost 70 days now of nonstop bombardment of Jenin, Tul Kerem, and Nablus and their refugee camps. In South Syria, they keep on expanding and bombarding Syrian villages and cities in Daraa. There is now an area of Syria that the Israelis occupy that they've expelled close to 250,000 Syrians from the areas of Qunaitra and Daraa and South Damascus that they have occupied. That's a larger number of refugees inside Syria than those who were expelled in 1967 from the Golan Heights. So the crisis is huge in the region, and the crimes are keep on piling and becoming bigger and bigger, and nobody's stopping it. The United Nations has no power. The journalists in the West are collaborationists with the genocide of killing of journalists in Palestine. Hospitals and medical associations in the West have abandoned the hypocritical oath. You know, it's so. If I was in Iran, an Iranian leader, if I was a leader in Yemen, I would prepare for the worst to come, and I should be ready. Iran and Yemen should be ready to wipe out all the oil and gas facilities in the Arabian Peninsula and all the American bases in the region in one blow. It shouldn't be, you know, taking too much time, and people shouldn't. I don't know if I have the patience that the Iranian leadership has, but if I was them, I wouldn't be waiting for the attack from the Americans. But then again, I am not a leader of a country that has 90 million people that I need to take care of. My emotions can go further than my my actual you know, duties.
Thank you so much, Leith, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Good to be with you, Nima. See you next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.